Deuteronomy 12 through 26. Y'all want to read it word for word? I hope you did that already this week. Was there anything in particular that sparked your interest in these chapters? It just kind of woke you up and said, wow, never saw that before. In chapter 12, in verse number 2, let's start there. You shall utterly destroy all the places wherein the nations which ye shall possess serve their gods, upon the high mountains, upon the hills, and under every green tree. Ye shall overthrow their altars, break their pillars, burn their groves with fire, hew down the graven images of their gods, destroy the names of them out of that place. Look at verse 4. Ye shall not do so unto the Lord your God. What does that mean? What did he say? Because they had altars and devotions all over the hills and mountains and in the woods, probably at the beach. And they would say, if you asked them, they would say, I can serve God anywhere. I can serve my God anywhere. I can serve God in the mountains, at the beach, in the woods. I'm serving God everywhere I go. Look at this next verse, or verse 3. He said, "You shall not." Or verse 4, "You shall not do so unto the Lord your God, but unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there. Even unto his habitation shall you seek, and thither thou shalt come." So here's what God said. God says, you're not going to worship me on every hill, every mountain, every beach, every forest you find. There's going to be a house of worship, and that's where you're to worship. Did you hear what I said? Because this is something we've got a problem with. Modern day, people say, I can worship God anywhere. And by the way, you can pray to God anywhere. You can worship God anywhere. But what he says is, but you come to my house. I define that place, and that's where you're to go. Now, that's in the Old Testament. And at that point, Jerusalem had not been established as that house, that place of worship. And right now they've got a traveling tabernacle. But he said, when you get there, you're going to find they worship everywhere, all over the place. That's not the way I do things, God says. You're going to be one place and you come there. Okay? That's what he said. There you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, heave offerings of your hand, your vows, your freewill offerings, and the firstlings of your herds and your flocks. And there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and shall rejoice all that you put your hand unto, ye and your households, wherein the Lord thy God hath blessed thee. So there, that place. Verse 13. Take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest, but in the place which the Lord shall choose. There it is again. God is establishing for them that while he is omnipresent, he's everywhere, and he can hear our prayer from anywhere, right? Even in the depths of the sea, you heard my voice, right? Even there thou hearest me. No doubt we can pray anywhere. But God said, come to my house. Oh, that's where I want you to come, to my house. And that's where our offerings are to go. And that's where our worship is to take place. That's where we're to pray. Doesn't mean we can't do it anymore. But he said, you come to my place. And he even gives them some leeway as far as bringing their offerings. He said, look, if it's too far for you to bring your offering, then you choose the best of your flock and you exchange that. You sell that and you bring that money and come to the tabernacle. If it's too far for you to walk that lamb all the way to the place that I shall choose, verse 26, only the holy things which thou hast, thy vows thou shalt take and go into the place which the Lord shall choose. Verse 28, observe it here. these words which I command thee, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee forever, when thou doest that which is good and right in the sight of the Lord thy God. So God says there's going to be a benefit to serving him. There's going to be blessings. And it's not just on us, but we've got to think of our children. You know, and we talked last week about, you know, God said, I will not hold him guiltless who doesn't bring his kids up the right way. And the question was asked, well, what if it's too late now? What if you didn't know that? And we're living with the consequences of that, aren't we? As parents, how many of us are paying for our mistakes now, right? Our failures. And so whatever that was, they're coming back. And we're having to experience that, and we're having to pay the price of it today. So so there are consequences. In verse number 30, take heed to thyself that thou be not snared by following them after that they be destroyed from before thee, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. He says, don't go to their idolatry. Now you'll run across, and I've probably told this story before, but we made a trip to South Korea, and one of the guys that was with us was from there, so he was our guide for the tour, and we went to a Buddhist temple. It's not uncommon in Korea. And you say, okay, well, that's culture, and so there's nothing wrong with looking at the culture. But then when we got into one of their temples, he said to my boss, it was a business trip we were on, said, give me some money and we'll pay them to pray for us. And this guy was a Baptist. This guy, I mean Baptist. When I say Baptist, I mean this guy got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, met with his friends to have Bible study every morning, not on Sunday, every morning. And so he was what I would have considered a very committed Christian. But he thought it was important that we get the Buddhists to pray for us. Now look, and God says, you tear down their altars, their temples, and you don't inquire after their gods. Don't pray to them. Don't worship with them. Don't worship like them. Verse 32, and what things soever I command you, observe to do it. Thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from it. So we're to live by God's instructions. In chapter 13, if there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and giveth thee a sign or a wonder, and the sign or wonder come to pass, whereof he spake unto thee, saying, let us go after other gods, which thou hast not known, and let us serve them, thou shalt not hearken to the words of that prophet or that dreamer. So here's what God's saying, let's be plain. That if someone comes along and prophesies, accurately predicts what's going to happen, and then it does happen, and then he says, now follow me to this other God, don't go. You say, but he's genuine, right? He said it would happen. He shows wonders, maybe what we call magic or miracles. Well, he could do it, so he must be the real deal, right? Look at what God says. For the Lord your God proveth you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. So God says, I will allow some of that to go on because I want to know that you're devoted. Guys, we can't be wishy-washy. There's coming a day, and the rapture will take place first and we'll be gone, but there's coming a day when there will be a false prophet that can do great wonders. Remember when Moses came before Pharaoh and he threw his rod down and it became a serpent? What did the wizards do? They did the same thing. And Pharaoh said, ha! Now Moses' serpent ate their serpent. But he said, can you, you know, with each one, those false prophets were able to replicate, to try to do it, to give some indication of what they were doing. Of course God was greater. Of course God's curse was far worse than what they could have done. His was not a demonstration of entertainment as theirs was. But they, you know, Moses saw what they did. He didn't falter and say, well, okay, maybe I'll go with your gods. We're supposed to stay true to God no matter what. And so we will have the opportunity to see others do things, and they will say, see, we're more powerful than you are. And God says, but don't let that fool you. Make sure your heart is set on God. Verse 5, chapter 13, and that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has spoken to turn you away from the Lord your God. Now, what you'll notice in these 15 chapters is that, and I don't know why I have to explain this every time, but somebody always says, well, isn't that harsh? Yes, it's harsh. Let me tell you something. When we take away the penalty of execution for people who are leading people away from God, all we're doing is allowing it to continue and allowing it to spread. And that's exactly what happened. When you look at the strength of the criminal penalties in this country, and we start relaxing them and a little bit looser and a little bit looser, and now they're closing stores down because the company owner says it's not worth it to be open. Nobody pays anymore. Just walk in and take what they want, and the law won't do a thing about it. And so I know it seems harsh, but there is a way that God says we're going to make our people strong. We're going to make our nation strong. In order to do that, we've got to eliminate sin. Verse 8, chapter 13, thou shalt not consent to him, nor hearken to him, neither shalt thou not pity him, neither shalt thou spare, neither shalt thou conceal him. Thou shalt surely kill him. Thine hand shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterward the hands of the people. So this is what he says. He says, if your brother in your family is that prophet, if someone in your family rises up against God, the rule here, and again, I want to be clear on this. This was then. This was just for that time. God is not commanding us to kill people today to enforce these laws. So let's be clear about that. But the instruction here was, if it's your brother, then you're to be the first one to throw the first stone. And then everybody else join in on the team. So that responsibility of the family to keep our family straight, that's the principle here. Now, don't go kill your brother and say, preacher said to do it. Okay? But this was for that time, for those people. Okay, that's what we're, I got to be clear about that. Because people say, oh, the Bible is so antiquated. No, but it is specific. This was specifically for those people at that time. And it's not for us today. And then we have cities of refuge. And I may be getting ahead of myself here. Go to chapter 14, if you will. Ye are the children of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves, nor make baldness between your eyes for the dead. For thou art a holy people to the Lord thy God, and the Lord hath chosen thee to be a peculiar people unto him above all the nations that are upon the earth. So in order to do that, what is he eliminating from those people? Sin. If you're going to be the greatest nation, you got to keep sin out. If we are going to excel as people, we have got to keep the sin out, because sin is what drags us down. Sin is what defeats us. And so if we play with it, we bring it in and take it out and bring it in and back and forth, that's going to keep us down. If we eliminate the sin from our lives, we eradicated it, it's got no place here. That's when we start to really make good advancements. It's so important to get that. And here again, he's talking about a nation. He's establishing a people. He talks about dietary laws here in chapter 14. And look at verse 21. I've got it marked, but I'm kind of back and forth on it. You shall not eat anything that dieth of itself. Thou shalt give it to the stranger that is in thy gates, that he may eat it. So he's not saying you can't eat it, it can't be eaten. But he says, but you are holy people. You're not even supposed to touch a dead body, right? Once they touch a dead body, there's this whole cleansing process and isolation and separation. But he says you can give it to the stranger, then if they want to eat it, they can eat it. Or you can sell it to a foreigner, an alien. But thou art a holy people, and thou shalt not see the kid in his mother's milk. Right? So there's that kosher thing. Right? You don't put cheese on beef, because the beef is a sacrifice of the cow, and the cheese is an offering of the cow. Right? So we don't have cheeseburgers. And really, that's, you don't see the kid in his mother's milk. It's just improper. And verse number 24, if the way be too long for thee, well, we've already talked about this. So again, when they're bringing their offering to Jerusalem or wherever that place will be, he says, maybe Shiloh, wherever they're going to bring it, just if it's too far, then he gives some allowances. It's important for us to realize that God is very stern. He's very specific, but he's also reasonable. And so while he has laws, there on some of those things, there's some wiggle room. Okay, does that make sense? And then he talks about the sabbatic year in chapter 15. Every 7 years thou shalt make a release. And so they would give the land a Sabbath rest. What do we call that today? Crop rotation. We've got to allow the land to recover. And so we plant something that just draws and draws and draws and draws from the nutrients. And then we put something on there that's going to actually give back to the land. And so there's a sabbatical year. You've got to let the land rest. But also is this release, a reset. What is a Sabbath day for? All right, it's a reset. It's for rest. It's, you know, when we're so busy all the time, maybe we don't really step back and see everything that's going on in our lives, and we don't consider our priorities. We don't have everything in order. So on that Sabbath day, we relax and we rest, and we kind of think, you know, what have I accomplished this week? What do I need to accomplish next week? And are they the right things, right? God, what am I doing? Am I doing the right things? And that's an important question to ask. And then he goes on talking about the sabbatical year. Verse 6, the Lord thy God blesseth thee, as he promised thee, thou shalt lend unto many nations, but thou shalt not borrow. And thou shalt reign over many nations, they shall not reign over thee. So he's elevating, he's giving them this anticipation, this expectation of greatness. But what is that based on? Obedience. If you'll work my plan, you'll be unbeatable. You'll never need anything. But will they do that? All right, so he shows us what it can be, but it's up to us. Guys, when it comes to salvation, our Christian walk, our Christian relationship with God, it could be wonderful. We could have sweet communion. We can talk to God. We can be in tune where we understand the voice of God as the Holy Ghost speaks to us, or the revelation, the understanding of God as it's revealed to us, even though we've not read it anywhere, no one's taught it to us. We just know it instinctively, if you will, but it's the Holy Ghost showing us those things. And so that divine nature that God says that we have in us, if we obey him. But the more sin we allow in our lives, the less likely that's going to happen. The farther we go towards sin, the farther we get away from God. And when we get far away from God, and yet we turn around, we say, God, where are you? And God said, I didn't move. I haven't gone anywhere. You know, people, we have to remember that there are consequences to our actions. And if we'll serve God, there's a consequence. And if we don't serve God, there's a consequence. If we follow God's plan, it will be better for us. He says in verse number 7, chapter 15, if there be among you a poor man, one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land, which the Lord thy God give thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thy hand from thy poor brother. Among you, right? Among you. Verse 8, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and lend him sufficient for his needs in that which he wanteth or needeth. But beware, because we're talking about the sabbatical year, right? And say, well, if I give him all this stuff, next year I have to just clean the bill. He can't owe it to me. We're coming up against that sabbatic year. And so if I loan him money, and after next year, he won't owe me anything. And so he says, don't be wicked. Look at verse 9. Beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand. And then I be evil against thy poor brother, and thou givest him not, and he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be a sin unto thee. In other words, what? He won't be able to pay it back. Or he won't be required to pay it back. And what's our rule? What do we live by? Never loan people money. Right? Never loan something you need back. If you can't afford to give it away, don't loan it. That's right? Because what happens is you loan somebody $500. And every payday rolls around, you're thinking, hey, he still owes me $500. And you know he got paid. And then tax season comes around, you know he got tax back, right? So, and you're always thinking, and if you see him in the store, what happens? He's going to avoid you. Now you're going to go the other way. And then, of course, if you should happen to say, what about that $500? Now you're the bad guy, right? Now you're the one. And so never loan something you can't afford to just release. And that's what he says. Don't say, uh-oh, if I give this to him, he's not. Look, that should be the case. We should not expect to get it back. I remember doing this with somebody years ago, 15, 16 years ago. And then got a check in the mail. And man, I was so excited because I never expected to see it back. It even cleared the bank. That was exciting too. I got excited all over again. So the best thing to know when it comes to loaning money is what? No. Yeah, no. Sorry. Wish I could. Verse 10, thou shalt surely give him. Thine heart shall not be grieved when thou givest unto him, because that for this thing the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thy works and in all that thou puttest thine hand unto. So pure religion and undefiled is this, what? Helping the widows and the orphans. And the idea behind that is they can't pay it back. They have no way to give you back what you give to them. So that's the true definition of religion, is faithfulness to God, is being able to do something for somebody who can do nothing for you in return. Jesus talked about this in the New Testament, didn't he? He said, y'all have these feasts, and you call all your friends, right? Everybody come to my house this week, and let's have dinner. And then what happens at that feast? Somebody says, everybody come to my house next week, and we'll have dinner. And then it just goes around. And so it's just more of a rotation. We're just feeding each other. What does Jesus say? Jesus says, stop feeding your friends, because you know that if you feed them this week, they're going to feed you next week. That's not pure. He said, tell you what, dude. He said, invite everybody that doesn't have a house to feed you in. Now you've done something, right? That's where we're giving. It's not giving because we give to each other and they give back to us. Verse 11, the poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore, I command thee, saying, thou shalt open thine hand wide to thy brother, to thy poor, and to thy needy in thy land. So we're supposed to be givers. We're supposed to be generous. And he talks about being a generous giver in verse 14. And then he talks about the servant that doesn't want to go away when it comes time to release him. You know, that seventh year, you're supposed to go, okay, you're free. But there was an allowance in there if that servant said, I don't want to leave. I want to stay. And then what did they get? They got an earring. They got an earring. And that all, they put a big marker in their ear. And that was the sign that servant was a servant for life. Verse number 17 is where you'll find that. Verse 21, chapter 15, if there be any blemish therein, as if it be lame, blind, have any blemish, thou shalt not sacrifice it unto the Lord thy God. And look at chapter 17, verse 1. Thou shalt not sacrifice unto the Lord thy God any bullock or sheep wherein is blemish or an evil favoredness. What does that mean? Okay, looks evil, ugly, mean, right? An evil favoredness. So what we give to God should be pure. Chapter 17, verse 6. At the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall he that is worthy of death be put to death. But at the mouth of one witness he shall not be put to death. The hands of the witnesses shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterward the hands of all the people. So thou shalt put the evil away from among you. So this execution, the one that accused, right, the two or three that accused, that saw them do something worthy of death, they were supposed to be the ones to actually begin the execution. So there's more to it than just saying, well, I saw him do it. Okay, well, then you're the first one that's got to throw the stone. And so it's a heavy weight to be a witness to a crime like that. And he talks about going to the Levites and the judges. So taking it to court when there are matters that we can't solve between ourselves. Verse 12, chapter 17. The man that will do presumptuously and will not hearken to the priest that standeth to minister there before the Lord thy God, or unto the judge, even that man shall die. And thou shalt put away the evil from Israel. So this idea of repeat offenders, gone. He said if they can't follow the law and they don't listen to the judge and they don't listen to the priest, be done with them. Again, what are we trying to establish? A nation. When we think it's cute and we laugh about it and we let people get away with the crime, whether it's in home, whether it's in school. I've said so many times, if you don't start it when they're small, it'll be too late when they're big. And I've experienced it fully. You got to start them early. They got to understand there's consequences. And when we let them dress like floozies when they're two, they're going to keep doing it when they're 12. And so can I say that in church? Is that okay? I already did, didn't I? God, it's not cute on a 2-year-old, and it's not cute on a 12-year-old. Put clothes on them. Cover them up. I'm not saying you're in the backyard running around in the sprinkler and all that, in the diaper. I get that. I understand that. But we got to be mindful of what we're training these children to do when they get older. And it's important. Verse 13, the people shall hear and fear and do no more presumptuously. Execution has a consequence. It has a, what's the word? Ripple effect. It has a ripple effect. And people say, well, I don't want to do that. That's the penalty. And they're serious about it. Because that's the way it is. That's the way it is at work, right? Somebody gets fired for doing something. Everybody else that's doing it stops doing it. I better not do that anymore. I might get caught. He talks about having a king there in chapter 17. He says that, you know, there may come a day when you want a king, but here's what we got to be careful of, he says. Verse 17, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. Who does that remind you of? King Solomon, right? Exactly what happened. And it shall be when he sitteth upon the throne of his kingdom, he shall write him a copy of this law. What does he say? He says the king better sit down and copy this law. Write his own copy of it. And he shall read therein all the days of his life, verse 19, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes to do them, that his heart not be lifted up above his brethren, that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left. So, the king himself is supposed to write a copy of the law. The king himself is supposed to read the law every day. Why? Because he's got to have good judgment. Because he needs to have that regard for God. He needs to have that close walk with God. Yes, sir. I will not talk in class. Used to be consequences. And that, you know, writing. What an assignment to say to your children, okay, I need you to sit down, I need you to write Genesis. I need you to sit down and write Exodus. Will you learn more if you do that? Sure you will. I know in most recently when I was in school, I make notes. I take notes. And no matter what the chapter is, I see some of those chapters that I would highlight, then I would go to do my notes, and it seemed like it was the whole chapter. Well, what's the point of doing notes? Just read the chapter. No, you need to write it. That was God's instruction. Have them write it out. Verse 13, chapter 18, verse 10. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or uses divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. Guys, I know that in recent years it became popular. I haven't seen much of it lately, for people to go to these mediums to be able to talk to the dead. Okay, remember what God said? God said, I will prove whether you're with me or not. So he will allow some of that stuff to go on. In fact, we have evidence in the Bible where King Saul did that. Remember that? He went to the witch and said, I need to talk to the prophet Samuel. And Samuel came and said, man, I was resting. Leave me alone. Let me go back to what I was doing. But there's evidence. But God says that we're not supposed to have it in the land. There's not supposed to be among us. Again, it's specific for that time. It's specific for those people. It's building a nation. But how can it be the wrong standard for us to live by? To make sure that's not in our lives. For all that, and so that's psychics, that's palm readers, that's card readers. What else do they call it? Fortune tellers, horoscopes, seance, right? All of that stuff. God said, don't do it. All these things are an abomination to the Lord. That's his words. We've only got 7 more chapters to go through. I heard the bell ring already. Chapter 19, verse 14. Thou shalt not remove thy neighbor's landmark, which they have old time have set in thine inheritance, which thou shalt inherit the land that the Lord thy God giveth thee to possess it. So we're not supposed to move the lot lines, the landmarks. Verse 21, chapter 19. If thine eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Chapter 20, verse 4. The Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. And then he gives some allowance here for who should go to war. And basically it's this. If you get married, if you plant a vineyard or start a new business, or if you're scared, don't go to war. Now, the marriage, he said, for that first year, let me see, verse 7. What man is there that hath betrothed a wife and hath not taken her? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man take her. So for that year, he's supposed to be taking care of his wife and not going to war for that first year of marriage. And then there's a lot of repetition. But in chapter 20, he talks about when we go to war, we're not to cut down all the trees. If you'll recall, in 70 AD, the Romans, as they swept through the land of Israel, cut down every tree. Well, God specifically says, if you need wood to build, make sure the tree you cut is not a fruit tree, not one that actually provides some food. You can cut down other trees, but not food trees. And in verse number 19, he says, the tree of the field is man's life. So there's that balance of nature there for those who think that we hate the environment. In chapter 21, in verse 23, if you hang a man on a tree, make sure you take him down before the sun goes down. Bury him that day, which you recall that from the crucifixion. Chapter 22, verse 5, woman shall not wear that which pertaineth to a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all that do so are an abomination to the Lord thy God. Okay, so this is the verse that a lot of churches use to say women shouldn't wear pants. Okay, this is the verse. Let me say it this way. Ladies, I see that we have a lot of ladies that wear pants in church, but I've never thought that you were trying to look like a man. Right? You're still ladylike, even though you're wearing pants. And so, now guys, if you come in a dress, we are going to have a problem. I know Brother Adam wore a kilt. That's okay, you know. So not exactly our culture, but we can allow it. But if he was in here trying to look like a woman, then we'd have a problem. Guys, that's what it's about. The whole point is that a woman is not supposed to try to look like a man, and a man is not supposed to try to look like a woman. An abomination, he says. And he goes on with a lot of other things in there. Let's see. He talks about divorce. Look at chapter 23, verse 13. This is, y'all always laugh at this when we come across it. Thou shalt have a paddle upon thy weapon, and it shall be when thou wilt ease thyself abroad, thou shalt dig therewith and turn back and cover that which cometh from thee. Okay? So just like a cat burying your waste. Okay? You say, really? That's in the Bible? There it is, right there in verse 13. Don't just leave it laying on top of the dirt. All right. Chapter 24, verse 5, there it is more plainly. When a man hath taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be free at home 1 year and shall cheer up his wife which he has taken. There it is, more plainly. Talk about not gleaning the corners in chapter 24. Chapter 25, verse 3, 40 stripes may he give him and not exceed. If he should exceed and beat him above these with many stripes, then thy brother should seem vile unto him. So we talk about the 40 stripes, save one. So 39 stripes with the whip. Okay, so save one. Verse 4, thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treads out the corn. So these are things in Deuteronomy that we find in the New Testament. Okay, Paul used verse 4, and then the crucifixion, verse 3, we're familiar with there. Verse 9, I know we're ready to go. Verse 9, then shall his brother's wife, so this is talking about if a man dies and doesn't have any children, then his brother is supposed to take his wife and bring her in and have children so that there's an heir, so that there's someone for the inheritance, okay? But what if my brother doesn't want my wife, right? So God says, okay, here's the deal. If he doesn't want her, then they come, verse 9, then shall his brother's wife come to him in the presence of the elders, loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done to that man that will not build up his brother's house. So in other words, you have no honor because you wouldn't do this for your brother's name. And so that's quite a divorce, isn't it? Y'all can read verse 11 on your own. All right? Any comments or questions? All right, let's take a break.